This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Once there were four children whose names were Peter, Edmund, Susan, and Lucy. And with that simple sentence, generations of young readers have found themselves in the magical world of Narnia, among talking animals, welcoming satyrs, a wicked witch, and a world of magic, mystery, and occasional menace. The movie version of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe opens this week, but even if it's a box office bonanza, the big screen spectacular can only confirm what owners of these slim books already know. Narnia is an enduring children's fantasy. Children's fantasy novels slip into a space between the fairy tales of childhood and the sword and sorcery epics that occupy most of the bookstore fantasy shelf. From J.K. Rowling to T.H. White to George MacDonald, writers create magical worlds, places to encounter malice and moral ambiguity in the safe remove of the unreal. And the lure of these tales continues long after childhood. Think about how many adults you've seen with their noses deep in The Hobbit or at Hogwarts. So what mixture of imagination, tradition, and reality keeps kids turning pages for generations? And are there things fantasy gives young readers that other genres can't? To discuss these questions, we've got quite a panel. Neil Gaiman, who's gone from writing mature readers-only comic books to the possibly stranger world of children's fiction. Christopher Paolini, the author of the Aragon series. He wrote the first one at the age of 15, which makes him both author and audience. And Tamara Pierce, who's written teen fantasy for more than 20 years. And we want to hear from you. What fantasy book or series stayed with you since childhood? What made it so good? Did it hold up when you were an adult? Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the show, we'll discuss the stranger-than-fiction world of the face transplant. How do you prepare psychologically for a new face? But first, the world of fantasy. Neil Gaiman may be best known as the creator of The Sandman, a series of graphic novels for older readers. His novels include the recently published Anansi Boys, and he writes dark and sometimes funny tales for children. He joins us from the studios of member station WHWC in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Nice to have you back on the program, Neil.
It's nice to be back, Neil.
Is there one thing that makes children's fantasy work?
I think the thing that really makes children's fantasy work is the power of belief. Children know when they're being patronized. They know when someone's telling them a story that the person telling it doesn't believe or is telling it to kids for their own good. I think, talking about Narnia, I think the enduring power of Narnia is that really you had C.S. Lewis following these ideas. He had this idea of a fawn in a snowstorm with an umbrella and packages and wanted to write the stories to find out who this fawn was and where he came from.
You wrote an interesting addendum to the Chronicles of Narnia, a story called The Problem of Susan. Why did you want to do it? Was it homage?
No, The Problem of Susan was a story that eventually sort of came out from something that had been bugging me for many, many years. The Narnia books were the books that hooked me as a reader, hooked me as a... I was maybe 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adored them, went seriously off them when I was 12, came back to them as an adult, first reading them to my older two children and then to my younger daughter. Mm-hmm. And each time I'd read them, I would get more and more irritated by the way that C.S. Lewis treated women of, let's say, reproductive age. Girls are cool, and get some terrific girls, and there are some nice elderly women in there, but when it gets to sort of beautiful, nice women of reproductive age, they're wicked witches, they're ditzy, they're strange, they're evil, they're not to be relied upon. Hmm. And Susan, who was the oldest of the children, is dismissed in the last book. All the others sort of go off to this wonderful Narnian heaven. And we are told that Susan didn't qualify because she was too interested in invitations, lipstick, and nylons. And whether you want to interpret that as being about vanity or being about sex or whatever, she didn't qualify. And it always struck me as being deeply problematic. And a few years ago, I wrote a short story addressing the problem of Susan and playing around with various Narnian ideas, and was quite fascinated by how people took it and how much power that story had.
I wonder, another element of your contribution was received by some with delight and others by, as blasphemy, I will say. But anyway, is an element of children's fantasy that children or childlike creatures have to be at risk, and that that risk has to be greater than just risk to themselves?
I think that's definitely part of it. But I don't think that you can, with any children's fantasy, sum it up to a formula. Because I think at that point you run the risk of making something very cold and very strange. In, obviously, a lot of great children's fantasy, something bigger than threat to themselves is there. But then again, you know, you've got Oz, in which, yes, the Wicked Witch is defeated, but really it's about Dorothy's quest to go home.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of the great children's fantasies, I think, they're about kids figuring out who they are, and they're about kids taking other kids to somewhere bigger and stranger and better.
And also,
than they might have in a...
yeah, but also about returning home, growing up in Peter Pan's world, and leaving that world. When in fact, one of the enduring lessons I think of a lot of these books is, even as adults, a lot of us would just prefer to live in these worlds.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, when I look back at the things that I got from Narnia, I'm very amused watching the current furore about whether or not Narnia is deeply Christian and whether or not Aslan should be perceived as Jesus and so on and so forth. Because I look back at what I took from Narnia as a kid, and it had Bacchus in it and, you know, the Greek god of wine, and it had these fauns and nymphs and Silenus and werewolves. And I went off and found out who they were. Nobody mentioned Jesus, and it never occurred to me that this cool, bouncy lion was Jesus. On the other hand, I went and found out everything I could about Bacchus, the god of wine, because he was in there.
If you'd like to join our conversation about children's fantasy books, give us a call. What was your favorite? Why was it your favorite? Does it hold up? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org, and we'll go to Michelle. Michelle's calling from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello.
Hello.
I was calling when you were talking about fantasy. I was a huge fantasy reader as a child, and I read the Narnia books probably at least 100 times each, and I'm not kidding, because I read them over and over again. And I also read the whole Lord of the Rings series. And what I found was kind of interesting, and I said I love those books, but as an adult, when I went back and reread the Narnia series, it wasn't as great as it was when I read it as a child. Now, my son loves it, who's 9, but as an adult, whereas when I read the whole J.K. Rowling series, as an adult, I never read that as a child. I would say I'm old. But as an adult, I was into that. It compelled me. It caught me up. But the Narnia series seemed to have lost something as an adult, even though my memories of it are wonderful. I said I loved it as a child.
Mm-hmm.
But as an adult, it kind of, the writing, something lost something when I became an adult. It was almost a little too simple, maybe. I don't know. I mean, my son loves it, and I still love the books. I'm glad he's reading them. But whereas the Hogwarts and the Lord of the Rings series seem to transcend both childhood and adult for some reason or other.
Neil,
I think kids literature, one of the things that you bring to it is yourself as a child, which can sometimes make it kind of hard to go back to. I remember as an adult going back to some favorite books as a kid, and remembering all this wonderful stuff, you know, the wind whipping, the snow, the whickering of the horses, and reading the section, and the entire section turned out to be something like, "I hope it stops snowing soon," said Jack. And I realized that as a kid, you bring yourself, you build these worlds, and they're bigger and better than any movie could be. And sometimes they're there when you go back, and sometimes they aren't.
I wonder, when you said you went seriously off Narnia when you were 12, was that because it was baby stuff?
No. I went off Narnia when I was 12 because I was very slow on the whole Christian allegory bit. And I'd completely missed the whole death of Aslan and coming back to life as being a Jesus thing, but I was rereading. I was one of these kids who also read the Narnia books over and over again, and you know, read other books because there weren't an infinite number of Narnia books to read. But at some point, I was reading The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And I realized that Eustace Scrubbs getting turned into a dragon and undragoning was actually a rewrite of the blindness of St. Paul on the road to Damascus. And I suddenly thought, hang on, there's this stuff all through here. And I felt like an author who I'd actually trusted to play fair with me had been hiding things in the text and had not entirely been playing as fair as I thought he was. These days it doesn't bother me, but when I was 12, I got up on my high horse and put the books away.
Michelle, thanks very much, and we hope your son continues to enjoy them.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Let's see if we can get Shane in. Shane's in Hartford City, Indiana.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say that I really, really admire Neil Gaiman's work. I just finished reading Coraline, and I was deeply impressed.
Thank you very much.
Coraline, well, go ahead. Go ahead, Shane.
I started reading when I was probably 11 or 12. My first books. I found Fellowship of the Ring in the bottom of a used book box in a library when I was about 12, I think. And I went from The Lord of the Rings straight to The Talisman by Stephen King. And these books, they just, most of it was, for me, I thought the most I got out of it was, I think I realized at an early age that I was going to grow up, and I guess I didn't really like the idea of growing up at the time, and these books kind of helped the transition, I think, a little bit. They helped me to accept that I was growing up in a way.
Interestingly, when we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking with a writer who wrote one of these books while he was growing up, so I guess we can put that point to him, Shane. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Thanks.
If you'd like to continue with us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email totn@npr.org. Our guest is Neil Gaiman, author of the Sandman comic book series and also of Coraline and other books for children. When we come back from a short break, Christopher Paolini, the author of the Aragon series, will join us, and we'll also be speaking with Tamara Pierce, the author of the Circle of Magic Quartet. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Writer C.S. Lewis believed anything worth reading when you were 5 is worth reading when you're 50. In a few days, we'll see how well that holds up in film as The Chronicles of Narnia comes to the big screen. In the meantime, we're talking with other writers of children's fantasy about what works and what doesn't and why. And we want to hear from you. What are the fantasy stories you loved as a child or as an adult, and why? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. My favorite from childhood, writes Margaret from Little Rock, Arkansas, David and the Phoenix by Edward Ormondroyd. I never could pronounce that. My copy is from the Weekly Reader Children's Book Club, vintage 3rd or 4th grade. I can still be set off giggling over the delivery of the Banshee's scream to the scientist. And this from Jeff in Salt Lake City. I read the David Edding series, The Belgariad, in my early teens and was captivated. It instilled in me a love of reading that has continued even today, much like the Harry Potter series has done for children today. Our guest is Neil Gaiman, author of the Sandman graphic novels, as well as books for children. Christopher Paolini is not just an author of children's literature. He's not that far out of childhood himself. At the age of 15, he wrote the first book in his Inheritance trilogy, Aragon. Aragon is the story of an orphan who discovers a mysterious blue stone that turns out to be a dragon's egg. Now 22, Christopher has already completed the second book in the trilogy called Eldest and is at work on the third. He joins us from the studios of member station KMEC in Bozeman, Montana. And it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation, Christopher.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You made the transition far more quickly than most of a fantasy reader to fantasy writer. Interestingly, we had a caller just before the break saying, you know, it made his transition to adulthood less scary, easier. I wonder if that translated as a writer as well.
I thought that was a very important point that he made, because when I was reading fantasy when I was a little bit younger, the main reason I read fantasy was not only because of the beautiful language often used by fantasy authors, and not only because it gave me a chance to visit worlds I'd never seen before and see things I'd never seen before, but because many fantasy stories deal with coming of age and growing up and how to deal with responsibility and basically becoming an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, fantasy was a way of, you know, it was almost like a way, you know, getting to watch role models do what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was exactly what I did want to do. I wanted to do what my fantasy heroes did. You know, I wanted to grow up and fight monsters and ride dragons and rescue beautiful elves. So when I graduated from high school, I was homeschooled my whole life. When I graduated, I just sat down and wrote those daydreams down, and it sort of took over my life after there.
I almost, in a way, and I don't mean to demean this in any way, but a lot of 15-year-olds would fulfill those desires by playing video games 4 or 5 hours a day.
Well, I'm not going to lie and say I don't play video games, but I've found that reading and writing is far more rewarding. Actually, going back a minute, I was really interested to hear one of the listeners mention the book David and the Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
which is one I really enjoyed reading, but also the David Eddings books, because the David Eddings book, The Ruby Knight, which is the middle of one of his trilogies, was the first fantasy book I ever read. And when I read it, I fell in love with it, and I knew, this is it.
Hmm.
This is, I don't care what else I'm going to do in my life, I know I love this.
Well, we've talked, Neil Gaiman, so far about, you were talking about that sense of wonder. We've talked about the idea of risk. This idea of growing up, of transition, is that a critical element?
I think it is, at least in my own stories, and also many of the books I read as well. You know, many great fantasy stories. You know, Mr. Gaiman mentioned Wizard of Oz, also C.S. Lewis's work, Tolkien, not so much, but partly, deals with people... you know, losing their families or having to go out into mm-hmm. the world and grow up. And I think that those stories are important in all forms of literature, but especially in fantasy. And fantasy sort of lets you externalize a lot of the difficulties that people may face, you know, in the real world. You know, like in the real world, you may get upset with your parents or you may have difficulty finding a job or something like that. In a fantasy world, you can make that much, much more exciting by, well, the job you've got to have now is, you know, saving the world. It may not be as exciting as, it may be more exciting than flipping burgers, but it's the same principle.
Yeah. Neil Gaiman, would you agree?
Yes, I think I would. Although I don't think that all fantasy is necessarily about growing up. I think some of it is just about taking one more step on the road towards growing up
mm-hmm.
and learning the lessons that life teaches you. And I think taking those life lessons is the big important thing. I was just to say, when I wrote Coraline,
mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, it's really a story about a 9-year-old girl learning a lot about bravery. Mm-hmm. It's not about growing up, but it's definitely about taking those first steps towards independence.
Mm. There are lessons. There are morals, if you will. Maybe not morals, but...
Not necessarily morals, but definitely lessons.
Hmm. Let's get another caller in on the conversation. I'm sorry, did you want to add to that, Christopher?
I would just say, you know, the true test of any book, though, is not the lessons it teaches, but if it just tells a good story that people are going to enjoy reading, you know, decades, if not centuries from now. And that's really the question, if a book's going to hold up or not. You know, does it tell a good story?
Not so much the moral, but the telling of the moral. But anyway, let's get Tish on the line. Tish calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi. My question is about series books as opposed to standalone titles. I am a school library media specialist, and I've noticed that although there are so many wonderful standalone title books out there that children flock to these series types of books, and I wanted to ask your guests what they thought, especially with the fantasy genre,
mm-hmm.
was appealing to writing a series rather than a standalone title.
Neil Gaiman, why don't you start?
I think there are two big things going on there, one of which is if you've actually gone off and created a whole world or a whole order of created things for yourself, you normally want to stick, as an author, more than one story in there. So there's definitely an urge towards series as an author. I think as a kid it's very, very simple, which is that if you like something, you want another one just like that.
Right.
Or as close to that as you can get. And that's the magic of a series there.
Christopher Paolini, you're writing a series.
I have nothing to add to that. I think Neil just hit it exactly on the head of the nail.
And Tisha, which ones are the most popular in your library?
Well, of course, Harry Potter. And I'm also seeing a great deal of interest in the Narnia series since the movie is coming out soon. I've had to order multiple copies of some of those because the kids are very eager to read it before the movie comes out, which I think is the better order of things. But yeah, definitely fantasy. There seem to be more appealing fantasy series out there than in any other, say, horror or adventure.
Yeah, but I assume, last year's movie was the Lemony Snicket movie. I assume that a lot of those books moved out of there as well.
Oh, of course.
All right.
Of course.
Thanks very much, Tish.
Thank you.
Here's an email we got from Kathleen in Portland, Oregon. My favorites were probably more magic than fantasy, but I loved all the Edward Eger books, ordinary children who find a talisman of some sort, in one case a book that wrote what they said and did as it happened, and have fantastic adventures because of it. I think I love them because they made it seem just possible that it might happen to me. And I think that's an element of it, too. And you see Madeline L'Engle's book, the Wrinkle in Time books. Neil Gaiman, there's so much to identify for a kid with those kids, as in the kids in Narnia.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Edward Eger did something very interesting. He was an enormous fan of E. Nesbitt's books, the Victorian author of things like Edwardian author of Five Children and It and The Story of the Amulet and things like that. And he just wanted to take them and put them in an environment that his kids would recognize. And so he set them in 1950s and 1930s America. Mm. I think it's a lovely, I was saying earlier there weren't any formulas, but it is a lovely formula. Just the idea of kids just like you stumbling into that one magical thing that will grant their wishes or almost grant their wishes or give them some wonderful magical thing that A, they will learn from, but what you take away from that as a kid reading it is not necessarily the lessons of half magic or magic by the lake or whatever, but you take away the magic and the idea that maybe if you just touched the right thing, put the right thing in your pocket or said hello to the right frog, it could all happen to you.
Christopher Paolini, your protagonist discovered the right precious stone, and things have developed from there. You've talked about the liking to live in that world, but as lessons, as people do age and get older, lessons get more difficult.
They do, and it's one of the tricks with a series such as I'm writing that you don't want to get too complex or too adult in a certain way, because then you end up writing something completely different. And that is one of the nice things about a series, of course, is that you can have things evolve and you can build things into ever greater depth and complexity, but you have to keep in mind where you originally started and hopefully where you're going.
Mm-hmm. Do you worry, either of you, about others have trod where you have gone before, not necessarily into that particular world, but Christopher, as I'm sure you know, Anne McCaffrey has written a lot of books about dragons, and she's not the only one.
No, and I think it's a wonderful tradition to be able to draw upon. When I was younger and I read these books, and then when I sat down to write one of my own, I knew that I wanted to write the sort of story that I enjoyed reading, and I knew I wanted dragons and dwarves and elves and that sort of thing. It's not to say that fantasy has to have those elements, but those were the elements I had fallen in love with and I wanted to continue to explore. I think that what it allows you to do is to use a sort of shorthand. It gives you, if you have a dragon show up, yes, you want to do something somewhat original with it, but on the other hand, people know what a dragon is. And you don't have to tell them what a dragon is. You don't have to invent it from scratch. And that's very useful in many cases when you are creating a world that no one's heard of before.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman, I've talked to science fiction writers who said, look, there was that first generation who spent a chapter explaining how the faster-than-light drive worked, and then there was the next generation who said, and then we switched on the warp drive and took off.
Oh, absolutely. And that really is one of the things that makes, I think, fantasy a little different still from science fiction, though, which is that with fantasy, you have things that have baggage. a dragon comes on, a dragon has baggage. And it has wonderful dragon baggage. And Anne McCaffrey didn't invent dragons, you know, nor did any of the other writers. We're just tapping into something that's been wandering around in human myth and consciousness forever. And I love that. I love the fact that, you know, if you can still write wizards without treading on J.K. Rowling's territory, because it's such an enormous thing. And by bringing on a wizard, you're doing a specific thing. I tend not to as a writer, just because I tend to go off to odd places if it's going to keep me amused. My next children's fantasy novel, the one that I'm writing right now, is set entirely in a graveyard. And
A chuckle fest, is it?
I hope so. I decided it was time to rewrite The Jungle Book.
Really?
All set in a graveyard, so it's called The Graveyard Book.
Huh.
About a kid whose parents are killed and who gets brought up by dead people.
Well, Christopher Paolini, I wanted to thank you for joining us today. He's the author of the Aragon series. His latest book is Eldis, and also working on a new book. He joined us from Yellowstone Public Radio in Bozeman, Montana. Good luck, Christopher.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we got from Aaron in Portland, Oregon. I like Tamara Pierce's series about Alana as a sixth grader. Read it again and again and like it as an adult, too. Alana was one of a very few heroes that I read that was part of a realistic young woman, and that's a big part of the appeal. I just introduced it to my best friend's daughter who reads it and her other series over and over. Well, as it happens, Tamara Pierce joins us now. She's written 5 full quartets of fantasy for both children and young adults. Her novels feature young women as the heroines of a fantasy realm with some medieval characteristics. The latest is called The Will of the Empress, and she joins us from member station WNYC in New York City. Nice to have you on the program as well.
Thank you.
Your books are famous for really letting the girls into play and letting them fight alongside the guys. Is that something?
I have a boy hero, too.
Well, yes, but is that the female participation something you missed in the books you read when you were a kid?
Oh, of course. We had active girls in historic fiction, but many feminists have made the point that by the end of the book, they were usually settling down and behaving and taking up more sedentary roles. I just kind of blocked on that part. The area where it got to me was at the end. Spoiler space here. For the old fogies, that means I'm about to blow something at the end mm-hmm. of The Lord of the Rings, where the warrior woman, Eowyn, gives up being a warrior woman. When I fell in love with Tolkien, that was the one really awful betrayal for me, that she gave it up. I didn't see why she couldn't have the family and the career.
Well, we didn't think of it necessarily as a career, but I guess it was.
Yeah.
Do you think in order to have lasting impact, you have to have read books as a kid first, these kinds of books?
No. Girls and women still deal with these issues today. I've gotten mails from women who are graduating from military schools, women who have been in the police, women who have been in different prominently male organizations who read my Protector of the Small series.
Hello? Whoops, that little chirp you heard was apparently a problem with our studio at WNYC in New York. It's generally a sign that something has disconnected along the magical highway between New York and Washington, D.C. I'm not sure, are we working this on an ISDN or on a fiber optic line or some other magical means of transmission? Neil Gaiman, you don't have to worry about these when you're writing books. All your devices work when you want them to and don't work when they don't.
It's one of the great things about being a writer. Actually, that of course is not true, because these days writers work on computers, and mm-hmm. computers were sent to bedevil us and drive us mad. That is their function. I gave up on writing on computers a while ago and went back to pens. Because
really?
Yeah, I love the fact that if I accidentally drop a notebook I'm writing something in, it will still all be legible afterwards.
I've actually seen your penmanship. You have one great advantage. You can read what you write. Most of us can't do that. Most of us suffered from being whacked across the knuckles when trying to devise the Palmer method as a kid. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. By the time we come back, we will hopefully have reestablished contact with Tamara Pierce in New York City and get her back involved in the conversation about children's fantasy literature. If you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're on a quest to find the elements of lasting children's fantasy with authors Neil Gaiman, and we're pleased to say returning to us electronically from New York City is Tamara Pearson. Nice to have you back, Tamara.
Well, it took a lot of running, but here I am. Plop.
And if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, totn@npr.org. And let's get Jill on the line. Jill calling from Boulder, Colorado.
Hi, how are you guys?
Very well.
My comment is that one of my most wonderful and treasured memories as a child was reading the Tolkien books. I loved The Lord of the Rings. I loved all those books. And when Peter Jackson did the movies, I felt like he did just such a violent and scary and adult version of the books, and it felt like kind of an adult intrusion into my childhood memories. And I wonder sometimes about, you know, our adult adaptations of some of these books. What do you guys think?
Tamara, what do you think?
The books were kind of dark and scary things. We remember the bright spots because the background was so dark. They were violent things. I think because the idiosyncratic moments like Gandalf stuffing his pipe and Sam cooking stick so firmly. They stick because the contrast is so great. The movie making makes it more vivid.
Neil Gaiman, some people feel that violence, the dark stuff, shouldn't be part of children's fantasy stories. It's certainly part of yours.
Part of most of mine.
That's true.
I've written some fairly bright stuff. I think that what's interesting is just that weird little gulf, though, between a book and a film. A book can be anything to the person who's reading it at the point where they discover it. A film does tend to be one thing, and something of the size of Lord of the Rings, for example, you can go into it because what you love is Tom Bombadil or Fog on the Barrow Downs or whatever, and pretty much ignore the battles. That wasn't the approach that Peter Jackson took. A different filmmaker could have taken a different approach. But it does kind of lock it down in a very strange way. You know, for the Narnia books or the Narnia stories, right now, inside people's heads, they are the book that they wrote. And there's 100,000 million different Lucys and Susans and Peters and Edmunds running around. In a month or two, maybe there'll only be four left, and they'll be the ones from the movie. And I think we would lose something from that.
Also, as violence in children's books is concerned, and this is something that I can speak to because I get spanked for it all the time, children live in a violent world. Children are hazed and bullied at school. They come home to the news. They do not live in a safe, protected little shell. And if you look at children's books really closely, you'll see that they are terribly violent places. Peter Pan and Hook, if you read the J.M. Barrie book, you'll see that there are very real edged weapons there and that they come perilously close to Peter's chest. I know I went around for days with prickling in the skin over my sternum, feeling a sharp edge pressed there from those battles with Hook. The idea of a crocodile munching your arm wasn't a pretty thing. Treasure Island, blind Pew gripping Jim's hand. Children's books, the good ones, are not safe. They are not violence-free because children don't respect when they have taffy sold to them, as Mark Twain would say.
Jill, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can get Sandy on the line. Sandy's calling from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hello. I am a really avid bookworm, and I love to read all fantasy books. I especially like books with wolf fighting in it, but mm-hmm. I was wondering, what got the writers here started writing?
Neil Gaiman, do you want to start with that?
I don't ever remember a time that I didn't want to be a writer. When I was a little kid, obviously, I didn't think that I could be a writer by writing books. That hadn't occurred to me. By the age of 12, I'd come up with wonderful scenarios in which I would tumble into a parallel universe which didn't happen to have a copy of Lord of the Rings in, holding the only copy of Lord of the Rings, which could then be published with my name on it, so I would get to be the author of Lord of the Rings. As I grew up, I realized the only way I was actually going to become a writer was to have to write things and start them and finish them. I started out as a journalist and was a journalist as long as I needed to be a journalist, and then started writing comics and fiction, and now just make things up for a living all the time.
Tabra Pierce?
It was my dad's idea. He caught me telling stories to myself as I did dishes. And instead of saying, "Tammy, people will think you're nuts if you talk to yourself," he suggested I write a book. He neglected to mention that it might be difficult, for which I got to thank him later. And the thing that made it stick, he said I could use his typewriter. Now, up until that moment, if I had laid a hand on that typewriter, I might be missing that hand today. It was death to touch the typewriter. He wrote the Union newsletter on it. So I knew without him saying so that this writing a book thing was a really big deal to my dad. So I asked him what I should write about, and we shared books all the time, so he knew what I liked. And he said, "How about travels in a time machine?" And I was about 2 years into my Greco-Roman mythology thing, and the first thing that popped into my head was, I could make myself go back to the Trojan War. And I sat down and I started hunting and pecking, and about a year and 100 pages later, I ran out of idea, but by then I was hooked.
Sandy, do you tell yourself stories? Do you want to be a writer?
Yes, I do. I would like to be a writer. I do tell myself stories all the time, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to know what started them. Everybody else writing.
Well, take notes. Sandy, thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank our guest today, Tamara Pierce, the disappearing one who was in New York and then came back. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tamara Pierce is the author of The Circle of Magic Quartet. Her latest book is The Will of the Empress. And Neil Gaiman, nice to talk with you again.
Good being on again. Thank you, Neil.
Neil Gaiman is the author of the Sandman comic book series and the Anansi Boys, recently published, and he joined us from the studios of WHWC, Wisconsin Public Radio in Eau Claire. And I should mention that Tamara Pierce joined us from the studios of our member station in New York City, WNYC.